Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
As some of you know, and as Rebecca mentioned when she read my bio, before my later in life return to divinity school, the call that has led me straight into the mysterious discernment of a new vocation and thankfully, blessedly, into the bosom of Arlington Street Church, I was a working artist. Day in and day out, for the better part of four decades, I wandered into the emotional wilderness with my beloved clients. Outfitted with my creative toolbox of words, pictures, and colors to help them identify and express their most authentic core values and desires. I was a designer of colors and patterns and a crafter of brand identities planted firmly, or at least I thought I was planted firmly, at the intersection of art, creativity, meaning-making, and belonging. My work was creative, collaborative, exhilarating, and purposeful, and it felt like a calling for me, my true vocation, until it didn't. It was the forced deceleration I experienced during the pandemic, I think, my loss of that massive centrifugal force of busyness that kept me pinned to the walls. That relentless pressure lightened when I found my frenetic work pace slowing down. And something I'd been missing came into focus. That the art I was making and the creativity I was practicing was in service of meaning-making and belonging for others, for my beloved clients who were doing essentially important work, but alas, not for myself. Though I'd been making art and practicing creativity for a long, long time, I felt a distinct emptiness of meaning when the busyness of my days subsided. I felt alienated from myself, from my work, and from my world. It was a wildly disorienting time of awakening to a darkness that I hadn't known was there. It's been a few years now since the confidence and certainty begotten of my career in the arts began to unravel. And I can see as I've journeyed through the last few years of divinity school that I'm still drawn forth by a hunger for belonging and a longing to feel reconnected to myself and to the world in a way that will light my way and satisfy this ravenousness of separation. The separation of these years has kept me questing for a revitalized sense of belonging, and I've been inadvertently drawn back to simple practices of creativity that set the stage for reflection, self-care, and the possibility for change. Like lighting candles to journal by, cooking good food for a loved one, helping a friend design a hands-off My Democracy poster, or a handwriting thank you note and posting it in the mail. Simple practices of creativity are everywhere to harvest and make our own. We are all artists. And when I say this, I decidedly do not mean that we are all painters or sculptors or songwriters or graphic designers. No, we may only know ourselves more simply as parents or plumbers, farmers or financiers, teachers or traffic engineers, diplomats or doctors, lawyers or librarians. And yet we all contain hidden treasure waiting to be mined, and we call experience confusing darkness waiting for a glint of light that will blast the darkness into a rainbow of color. Honestly, let me say that when I hear the words, "Oh, I'm not an artist," I can feel myself rising up like an evangelical for creativity because of my own experience of finding my way back to modest, simple, everyday creative practices. It's been healing in a way that I'm still working to understand. I suspect that there's a mysterious reciprocal relationship between the practice of creativity and a sense of belonging. And this is the holy conversation I want to explore together today. In her beautiful book, Big Magic, subtitled Creative Living Beyond Fear, Elizabeth Gilbert tells a story I adore about the Australian writer, poet, and critic, Clive James. At the height of his career, James wrote a play for the London stage that unexpectedly, and to everyone's surprise, was a complete flop. The critics panned it, and the production closed early. The fiasco ruined his family financially and cost him a few dear friends. The whole experience left him humiliated, discouraged, and depressed, so much so that he went into a desultory depression and stopped writing and working altogether. Weeks passed, then months. The failure seemed to have dried up and hollowed out his spirit. Until one day, his young daughters asked for a mundane favor. They asked if he could spruce up their secondhand bicycles to make them look better. He dutifully, though not joyfully, obeyed. He hauled himself up out of his funk, dusted off an old can of bright red paint, thinking it might be a quick and easy chore, just a coat of red paint and done. Once he started, however, something shifted, and after the red paint dried, he added some detailed flourishes. He frosted the spokes silver, striped the seat posts to look like barber poles, and then by some mystical, magical force, the momentum continued to build. Gilbert writes, "When the paint dried, he began to add hundreds of tiny silver and gold stars, a field of exquisitely detailed constellations all over the bicycles. The girls grew impatient for him to finish, but James found that he could simply not stop painting stars. Four-pointed stars, six-pointed stars, and the very rare eight-pointed stars with peripheral dots. It was incredibly satisfying work. Eventually, the girls rode away, giddy and in love with their sweet bicycle makeovers." And then Gilbert continues, "The next day, his daughters brought home another girl from the neighborhood who asked if Mr. James might please paint stars on her bicycle, too. He did it. He trusted in the request. He followed the clue. And when that was done, another child showed up, and another, and another. Soon, there was a line of children, all waiting for their humble bicycles to be transformed into stellar objets d'art. And so it came to pass that one of the most important writers of his generation spent several weeks sitting in his driveway, painting thousands and thousands of tiny stars on bicycles for every child in the area." Clive James had fallen from the height of success through failure into despair, and the simple act of saying yes to this chore for his daughters brought him out of the darkness and into the light of day in his driveway, back to motion, back to life, back to freedom, back to healing, back to himself, back to work. And as he did so, he came to the slow discovery that failure has a function. Failure asks you if you really want to go on making things. And to his surprise, James realized that the answer for him was yes. Gilbert goes on with the story, "When the last bike had been decorated and every star in James' galaxy had been painted, he thought to himself, I will write about this one day. And in that moment, he was transformed. He was free. Failure had departed, and the creator had returned." Clive James tricked his way out of what Gilbert calls the hell of inertia, straight back into the big magic of creativity. In that driveway, amid the spokes and the seat posts and the thousand silver and gold stars, something came back to life. Something was healed. saying yes to something he was neither trained for nor had ever been praised for, Clive James found his way back to himself. And eventually he found his way back to the word, back to the page, and back to the stage. The bicycle painting work that had begun as a dutiful fatherly chore and progressed through an unexpected and irresistible pleasure crescendoed in kind of a vital, euphoric joy and returned Clive James to a sense of belonging again. Essentially, though, the post-bike painting star flourishing Clive James was no longer the same Clive James that had recently bombed on the London stage. No, the man coaxing stars onto children's secondhand bicycles in his driveway and delighting his daughters and their friends was a different man now. He had been changed by his journey from darkness of housebound despair to the light of the driveway. He was a new Clive James, surprised and humbled and delighted by his unexpected encounter with creativity that flowed after he said yes to his daughters. Clive James himself had been created anew by the act of creativity. Our modern usage of the word creativity is quite young, dating only from 1850, and first referred to as creativeness. But the roots of both creativity and of creation are, of course, our English word create, which has ancient roots like many English words in Latin. The Latin words creatus and creare, meaning to make grow, to bring forth, to produce, to procreate, to beget. It's a verb of birthing and transformation. And after Clive James' encounter with creativity, he was transformed by the experience and delivered into a new kind of belonging with himself, with his daughters, with his village, and with his work. His encounter with creativity was a path back to belonging to this world. This, I suspect, is also what I was looking for in my graphic design practice and not quite finding until I left my first supposed vocation in search of a new one. I was looking for a revived sense of assuredness of my belonging to the world. I love Clive James' story for many reasons. It's old-fashioned, duty-bound Englishness, the sweet, unexpected relentlessness of the stars, and the quiet, unassuming faithfulness with which James' family accompanies him through his darkness. There's a lot to love, but what I love most about this story is the hidden trail map it provides for all of us back to the light. Back to the light of belonging. And we will be looking for that when we too, and we will, find ourselves enveloped in darkness following a pandemic-induced isolation or a rejection or a separation or a failure or an illness or a death or a fall from grace. Even though Elizabeth Gilbert calls what happened big magic, I see a hidden thread here that we can hold and follow. Clive James' darkness was lifted not by a lightning bolt of inspiration or a big infusion of cash or an unexpected job offer. Clive James returned to himself and to the light and to a sense of belonging to the world, first by saying yes to his daughters and beginning. Second, by working with what he had, what was just in front of him. Third, by quietly following his instincts. And fourth, by getting out of his own way so he could be of service. Saying yes and beginning, working just with what we have, with what's in front of us, following our instincts, and losing ourselves to be of service. This hidden thread, I think, is the hidden intertwined DNA helix of creativity. Dear spiritual companions, Let's take with us today the deep knowing that we belong to the world. Like the poem says, we do, and we have to deal with that. We belong to the world, to creation, and creation belongs to us. The urge to create and creativity is our birthright, it's our nature, and it's our mother tongue. We belong to creation, and every moment have the ability, metaphorically and literally, to call forth light from the darkness, plant seeds that will bear fruit, and paint stars that will brighten the lives of loved ones. All of this so we can free ourselves from whatever is keeping us down and keeping us bound. This is the practice of creativity. This is what it means to live a creative life, whatever our profession or vocation. When we practice creativity, we, by saying yes and beginning, by working with what's in front of us, by following our instincts, and by getting out of our own way to be of service, we are saying yes to belonging. Yes to the fact that we are part of creation, something we may forget but is forever real. We are part of something older, larger, and more wondrous than just ourselves. And in our culture that often rewards detachment and consumption over connection and creation, practicing creativity can be the way we remember the truth that we belong to creation and we have never stopped belonging. Let's hold that close and let's practice it often so that when the darkness arrives again, we'll know what to do. Amen. Dear ones, as we prepare ourselves to leave here today, let's go provisioned with the deep knowing that we belong to the world. We are part of creation itself and part of the sacred reciprocity of creativity and belonging. Lest we forget the terra firma of this beautiful truth, let's practice some creativity to find our way back home to belonging. By saying yes and beginning, by working with what we have just in front of us, by trusting our instincts, and by losing ourselves in service to others. May we be blessed with the practice of creativity so that we may find our way back to ourselves, to one another, and to the world. May it be so, and may we make it so. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. Bless your hearts. I love you. Amen.
Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Your divine, my divine. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Your divine, my divine.
We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.